I've paid my dues time after time.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And we'll start the next segment with a voice you might recognize.
Hi, I'm Sergio Romo, closer for the San Francisco Giants. You might remember last fall when we beat the Detroit Tigers for four straight games to win the World Series. Why did we sweep? Well, Marco Scudero knocked in a tie-breaking run in the 10th inning of the final game. And yeah, I struck out the Tigers' best hitter to end the whole thing. But you want to know the real reason we clinched the series so quickly? It's because shorter is better. Like K-A-L-W, the Giants know that when you have a goal, you should achieve it quickly.
Indeed. Well, the Giants are doing pretty well again this season. Their concessionaires are not. At least not according to their union. About 750 vendors, prep cooks, dishwashers, and other employees of food service provider CenterPlate haven't received a raise since 2009, the year before the Giants won their first World Series title. And according to union rep Niskit Hegde, they've been operating without a contract for more than 3 years.
When you have a team that's gone up in value by 40%, when you've got ticket sales that have ticket costs that have increased, the cost of a hot dog that's increased, the cost of a beer that's increased, the only thing that hasn't increased is their wages.
CenterPlate says its employees at AT&T Park receive an average of $15 to $20 an hour with the potential for health care for their families if they work enough events. After new contract negotiations stalled last week, the union authorized a 5-day strike which could begin any time. The baseball team is back in town today to start a homestand against the Washington Nationals. A contingency plan is in place to serve the fans if concessionaires walk. The Giants have sold out 187 consecutive games. It's the longest streak in the big leagues. And when it comes to professional sports, the Bay Area on the whole is having remarkable success of late. The Giants have won 2 of the last 3 World Series. The A's made the postseason. The 49ers came within a play of winning the Super Bowl. Even the Golden State Warriors and the San Jose Sharks have had deep playoff runs this month. Whether or not you care about that, you have to admit, being a fan is quite a phenomenon. Millions of people are crazy about sports, whether or not their teams are any good. Exactly why that is the subject of Eric Simmons' new book, The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. Simmons sat down with KALW's Ben Trefney to talk about the chemistry of fandom, starting with Simmons' least favorite sports experience.
2007, October, UC Berkeley football team, really, really good team, tons of stars, ranked number 2 in the country, playing at home on homecoming against an unranked team from Oregon State that's like, Oregon State. Cal goes down early and then makes this inspiring comeback. The freshman quarterback is filling in for the injured starter, and it's just this 10 seconds left, and they're on the 8-yard line, and they go for one last play, and the collective unconscious is feeling like this is destiny right here. This is what we were meant for. Finally, none of us have ever seen this happen, and we're going to see it now. And then the 18-year-old makes a mistake, which 18-year-olds do, and he runs with the ball instead of throwing it. He's tackled. The clock keeps running. They have no timeouts left. The game is over. They lose by 3 points, like 8 yards away from destiny. And I remember, like, really distinctly, I'm standing there with my hands on my head. My mouth is open. You know, I'm like literally jaw-dropping. And everybody else in the stadium is just hushed, and everybody else is standing there with their jaw open and their hands on their head. Like, why does this always happen to us?
Well, that's a good question, and that's kind of what you're exploring in this book. And so why do people, even if their teams are terrible or lose all the time and give them all this heartbreak, why do people continue to put themselves through it?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around kind of going to all these different areas of science and psychology. But I think it's actually a fairly pleasing answer, which is that the winning and the losing doesn't matter quite as much as it sometimes feels like it does. And what's important to us is pride and identity and loyalty and love and these things that, you know, make us what we are and make us human and are more important to us than the team winning or losing.
Well, we'll get to some of those aspects of what fandom means beyond the winning and losing, but I want to get into some of the science that you talk about, because you look at this from a real scientist's perspective. When Cal blew that game, what do you think was going through your body chemically?
So the first place you look is testosterone, which it's really interesting. It appears to be only in men that this changes this much. But in men who are watching their favorite teams, your testosterone basically looks like the athlete's testosterone. If they win, your testosterone probably goes up. If they lose, it probably goes down. And it's this kind of amazing thing where no matter how removed you are from the action, you know, no matter how much you're just sitting there on your couch doing nothing, your hormones are kind of reacting like they're playing the game too.
Because you actually say that you usually watch games by yourself. You know,
yeah.
You don't go out to a bar or to a buddy's place that often. So even despite that, when you're sitting on your couch and there's nobody even around to share with, you're having the same chemical reactions as the athletes?
Yeah. In a lot of experiments, it seems pretty clear that vicarious or directly competing doesn't matter. Your testosterone responds to winning and losing.
That's Eric Simmons. He's the author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. And he is from Castro Valley. He's a Cal grad. He's a Sharks fan, San Jose Sharks, and he lives in San Francisco. So one thing you get at in this book is about identity. You actually have sections about relationships, love, addiction, and identity. I kind of want to get to the identity thing. The team that I'm interested in talking with you about, you talk at length about in your book, is the Oakland Raiders, who are really no good. but they've got the most identifiable fan base maybe in all of football, and you met a lot of them. So first off, Eric, I'd like you to tell me who the key components of the Raider Nation, the Black Holers, are.
A lot of guys in costumes. Actually, I love the Raider Nation, and I'll try and explain why. So they have every year a fan convention, and in 2011 was the first time I went to the fan convention. It was in downtown Oakland in the first weekend in November, and it was like 2 days after the massive Occupy general strike. So there's like, I get out of BART in Oakland, and there's still like tear gas canisters out. There's still police and riot gear everywhere. There's people, you know, there's spray paint and boards. And then there's the Raider fan convention. And it's like, what better setting? And then you step inside, and it's like, these guys are having a family reunion. This is a sweet, pleasant group where people of all ages and races and genders are getting along, and they're hugging each other, like emotionally, like long lost brothers.
But beyond your normal family reunion, you mentioned they were costumed. I mean, this is sort of like the bar scene in Star Wars at the same time. So what are the people who like really show up in the black hole? What are they wearing?
So they're hugging each other. But on the other hand, some of the hugs are difficult because they are in, like, say, a giant predator costume or a really elaborate gorilla costume with these giant beads, like New Orleans Mardi Gras style beads around his neck and a striped cat in the hat top hat.
There's the guy with the spiked shoulder
the
pads. There's another head coming. That guy's named the Violator?
The Violator, he goes by, yeah. Right. Actually, my great story about this is that Gorilla Rilla, who I met and just adored, a really, really sweet guy.
You went to lunch with him. Right?
I went to lunch with him, yeah, and his fiance, who goes by Jungle Jane, at the time. So they got married over the summer, and High Roller Raider is there with his monster truck, and Dem Raider Boys sang the wedding march, which was a hip-hop anthem that they have written for the Raider Nation. The Violator was the best man in costume. The Gorilla was in costume. Jungle Jane was in a lovely wedding dress with Gorilla Rilla bling. And you can look this up on YouTube, by the way. and the pastor was the pastor of Raiders for Christ. It was just this elaborate family wedding. And it gets into actually this super interesting psychology where they talk about kind of your social identity versus your self-concept. So you have this idea of who I am, but you also have this idea of what group I'm in, who I am a part of as a group. And for the Raider Nation, it's almost much more important to be part of this group. A lot of, you know, the first thing a lot of them say, you sit down and you ask them a question. It's like, well, I don't really like the word fan. I'm not really a fan of this team. This is my life. This is my family. The Raider Nation, will live no matter where the team is, no matter whether the team wins or loses. Like, they play 16 games a year. My passion is all year.
That's Eric Simmons. He is the author of The Secret Lives of Sports Fans, The Science of Sports Obsession. So we began by asking about what your least favorite sports moment ever was. And you don't actually mention in the book what your very favorite sports moment was. So I want to give you the chance to reflect on that for a minute and then tell me what that one was.
Oh, the very favorite. I'm not sure how well it reflects on me, but this is probably about as good as you're going to feel. I did talk about it in the book. I just didn't identify it as my favorite because it's a lot of people's favorite, at least in my tribe, which is the 2009 Cal-Stanford big game in football, which took place in Palo Alto. It was a very unheralded Cal team. They were middle of the pack. It was a very good and obviously up-and-coming Stanford team. And so you're watching this game, and Cal's hanging on to this lead, and Stanford is clearly going down to win it in the last few minutes. And as obvious as it was that we were going to win that game that we ended up losing, it was obvious that Stanford was going to win this game. They were unstoppable. And for whatever reason, Jim Harbaugh calls a pass for Andrew Luck, who throws a bad pass, probably the only bad pass he threw in his entire college career, throws it right to a Cal player who intercepts it and falls down on the ground. And there was just this stunned moment of euphoria where it's like, we just won. And I'm trying not to scream the things that we were screaming, but holy shit, we just won. And it was just, and there's a lot of signs that the more unpredicted a result, the more dopamine in the brain. And this was just this utter dopamine blowout. It felt so amazing and so unexpected and so just euphoric for 24 hours after this. It was just, I woke up the next morning giggling, and it felt great.